Hey, it's your Monday downtown. It's 4:32. Time for us to get on board the telephone line and welcome in Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Good Monday, Mr. Finn.
Hey, Rich. How are you? Good Monday to you.
I am doing great. We were talking in the break here. The weather has been great up here. You're getting a little rain, which I guess is headed our way, but it's warm. The snow is gone. And, you know, the only thing missing would be a really good baseball team to cheer for, but I don't know that that's going to happen.
Yeah, the only thing that's missing is a frontline starting pitcher, right? That's what we really need this spring for the Red Sox.
Jordan Montgomery is still out there. There's still a small part of me that thinks they're going to get him. What is wrong with me? Why do I keep thinking that when all evidence says, no, they're not going to do that?
I do, too. And I think we have to reserve judgment on Craig Breslow's offseason and, yeah, Sam Kennedy's offseason and Tom Werner's offseason, John Henry's, until we see how this shakes out with Montgomery. I saw Scott Boras, who's the agent for all these guys who aren't in camp yet. A couple of his guys have started to sign. Matt Chapman got that deal with the Giants, but I know JD's still out there, Snell, and Montgomery. And I saw that he said today that four teams have now expressed interest in these guys. And I read that and I thought, that's desperation. That's what that sounds like. That when you're starting to put out the mystery team trick that he pulls, it made me think that maybe the teams that have checked in on involvement much earlier and kind of held their ground on price, like the Red Sox, who spoke to him at the beginning of spring training, may end up ultimately winning this thing.
Red Sox did make a move over the weekend, picking up the veteran C.J. Is it Cron or Crone? I can never remember, but not a bad right-handed bat. He's a first baseman who I'm sure can give Casas a night or two off against tough lefties, and a guy who's had some pretty good power in the past.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by it. He's a guy who's had a little bit of trouble against lefties the last couple of years, surprisingly. 2021, he had a huge season. But he's strictly a first baseman. He's not a outfield type. And I saw they signed him, and I thought, all right, this is it for Bobby Dalbec. But Dalbec can still play third base. He's tried the outfield. Heck, they stuck him at shortstop on and when they were really desperate, 6'5" shortstop. But I guess it's probably that roster spot. And Dalbec gets sent somewhere for a player to be named later or something like that. But I have a hard time seeing where his playing time is going to come unless he cranks it up against lefties again. Then you can see him DHing when Yoshida doesn't DH against the tough lefty or whatever. You can see him giving Casas a day. Maybe they think they can hide him in left field once in a while at Fenway Park, though he really doesn't have any evidence that he can be a corner outfielder. So interesting bat to pick up for sure. They must see something they like there, but I'm having a hard time figuring out what the fit is.
Well, and even if they had somebody like Montgomery, the margin for error would be pretty thin and made thinner with this injury news for their young infielder, Vaughn Grissom, who it looks like is unlikely to be ready for the start of the regular season. So let the Emmanuel Valdez era commence.
I hope he brought his glove to camp, and it's a better one than he had last year. Fenwick, he was a Will Cordero level disaster as a defensive player.
But, wow.
I was disappointed to see that, and I know everybody's made the joke already. It's the guy in the Chris Sale trade that gets hurt first isn't Chris Sale is kind of surprising, but he was one of the things I was really looking forward to because this is a young player who's put up really good numbers in AAA and has had a few moments in the majors. Red Sox fans probably remember him hitting a bomb at Fenway a couple of years ago when he was up with the Braves. A really gregarious personality. Seems like a great kid. I think he's going to be a good player for the Red Sox and a popular player for the Red Sox, and they need those. This is a setback. You can't get acclimated with Story now as a double play combination. Can't get that, just get the start that he needs to have that you'd really hope he would have as a young player with a new team that has a lot of promise. So it's kind of a bummer.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Well, that Celtics-Warriors game yesterday, that was, it's been 37, 38 years since I've seen anything like that. I'm going to say it. This is as good a Celtics team as I've seen since 86.
It's funny you say that, because I'm writing for tomorrow. I was supposed to write about their bench, but it's ended up being a distraction going back to yesterday's game. I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And what that reminded me of was the 36-6 run the Celtics fans from that era will probably remember against the Hawks. I think it was in Game 5 of the East Semis in 86, where they mopped the floor with them. With Dominic Cook and Doc Rivers, that really talented Hawks team that never won anything because the East was brutal back then, so loaded with talent. And they just I looked up what Bob Ryan wrote about it, and he said, you know, it's basically the best display of basketball he'd ever seen. And, no, this isn't at that level, and the stakes aren't that high, but it was reminiscent of that. And the play, actually, that made me think of that and made me think of those Bird Celtics teams where they'd run fast breaks and the ball wouldn't even touch the floor, yeah. Maybe one dribble and just pass the layup or dagger three-pointer, was at the end of the first quarter, Cornette has a block, ends up with Holiday, takes two dribbles down the middle, kicks it to Pritchard, and he just sticks a dagger three right in the Warriors' face that made the run 21-1, and I think the score 42-22 at that point. And that reminded me, the ruthlessness of that play and the way they played that game yesterday reminded me of those 80s Celtics.
Well, that's what I like about this team so much, is that everybody on the bench seems to know their role. Porzingis is out. Luke Kornet steps up and plays great. Pritchard, every time he goes in, he's just nailing threes from everywhere. Jrue Holiday, the consummate professional out there. And all of that has enabled, I feel like, Tatum and Brown to be much more controlled this year and not freelancing quite as much.
I think a huge factor is Holiday, just the way he carries himself. Because you look back, he was the second best player in a championship team with the Bucks because Chris Middleton was beat up. He wasn't the same. Holiday threw a lob to Giannis that won a playoff game, a finals game that set them on their way to winning the championship the next game. And he was a guy who got ISOs run for him last year, who ran their offense. And now the Celtics, he's basically the fifth option who often stands in the corner and just tees up open three-pointers. And he's been totally cool with that and mastered it. He's third in the league, fourth in the league in three-point shooting, I think. And leading by far in corner three-point percentage. And his attitude this year, I really believe, is rubbed off on Tatum and Brown. But they see this guy who's already got a ring, sacrificing everything in a contract year to fit in. I believe that impact is on Tatum, Brown, and everybody else on this roster has been a little bit understated.
And you know, Joe Mazzulla has been better this year. But Brad Stevens, what he's done as a fairly young executive in putting this group together and finding those pieces that made everybody better.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big Danny Ainge guy. I thought he'd get too much grief. A lot of the draft picks that people complained about him holding on to turned into valuable guys. Peyton Pritchard's one of those guys. Late first-round pick Rob Williams, who helped get Holiday here. You know, Grant Williams, mid-round 22nd, I think, and ended up being a helpful Celtics player. So, And Danny, of course, is the one who made arguably a top three trade in NBA history, sending out Pearson Brown Garnett to bring eventually Tatum and Brown here, having the gut to trade the first pick and get the guy he wanted in Tatum at number three. All these things, he was fantastic. But what Brad has done is, it's like when Theo came here with the Red Sox, where Duquette assembled the stars, but he didn't really do the mid-level pieces that you needed. And the guys who just fit right, the Bill Millers and guys like that, that's Derek White. That is Drew's extremely accomplished NBA player, but that's what he is. Recognizing he got first-round picks back in the Porzingis-Smart trade. You look at that trade now and you say the Celtics should have thrown three first-round picks in or something like that. It's just he's been extraordinary at this job, getting Al Horford for Kemba Walker in his first trade. He's taken what Danny did and just brought it up a level on you know what Danny left for him. It's remarkable.
Is there anybody in the East that you think poses a real threat to them, keeping them from getting back to the finals?
Tripping over a bolt on the parquet like Kevin McHale in that Sears episode.
No.
I think that's about it. I mean, health, that's it. Everybody's happy in their role. Everybody's clicking. I think you look at Xavier Tillman and you say, this is a guy who's going to be able to give them minutes in a pretty similar way to what P.J. Brown did in 2008, just defense, rebounding, muscle, smart play, and, you know, maybe hitting a big shot once in a while. Like, you know, P.J. Brown hit a big one in that Cavs series. Maybe Tillman has a moment like that, but he's going to be helpful. And everybody else fits, and fit in the right way. You have these volume scorers in Tatum and Brown, and you have these guys, White and Holiday, who they're fantastic players, but they couldn't tell you what their point total is at the end of the night. And it just all works. And we know what championship teams look like here, championship basketball teams, and this looks like one. It's just a matter of staying healthy.
What is the latest Patriots master plan now? Is it wave goodbye to Mac Jones, keep Bailey Zappe as a backup until you get something better? Let's see, trade for a veteran guy, but then draft the future quarterback. Is that the new plan?
Russell Wilson, baby, he just got released. Come on, stand that guy. But hopefully, it's nothing like that. You know what, Rich? Actually, I like all three of the quarterbacks that are available. You in the draft. Mm. You know, you look and they're. I mean, they're all different. You know, obviously Williams is probably going number one, and he draws those thin comparisons to Mahomes just in terms of style of play. Nobody expects him to be that player, but he has a lot of similar characteristics as a quarterback. And you know, May and Daniels are different. May's bigger, much. You know, he's 225. Daniels, I think, played like a 210 last year, and he's lanky, but and style of play is a little bit different, but. There's things about both of them that you really love. I mean, Daniel throws a beautiful deep ball, and he runs so well. And May, just you watch him, you say, oh, that's Justin Herbert right there. So I think they're going to end up in a good spot with whoever they end up with in that three spot, assuming they stay there, and it sounds like they will. And assuming they take a quarterback, sounds like they will. So draft the new kid. Don't force him to play right away. Bring in Brissett or Gardner Minshew or whoever. And you know, treat this young quarterback that's going to be your franchise cornerstone. Don't force him into a bad situation. Just make sure when he's not playing until he's ready to play, and you know, get that interim guy in the meantime.
I would never suggest that your colleague Dan Shaughnessy wasn't tough, and now I know for sure after hearing this story about him. Cranking out a column while he's waiting to have heart surgery.
Yeah, Brian McGrory, our former editor's opinion writer now, wrote and columnist, and just one of the best writers that we've ever had here, we've ever had in Boston modern times, is wrote about Dan's health issue where, you know, he ended up having quadruple bypass a couple weeks ago, thought had been having you know, some symptoms, went and got checked right away, and turned out to be much scarier than he expected. And McGrory wrote about, if you didn't see it today, about how Dan filed his column before going into surgery about Theo Epstein and what his role with the Red Sox would be. And it has really a lot of behind-the-scenes details about Dan's interactions with Theo and stuff like that. It's fantastic. And, you know, it's one of those things you read, and you're like, I wish I'd written that. I wish I talked to Dan about that, but I could not have pulled that off as good as Brian did. So just go read it if you're, you know, if you're a Red Sox fan. Whether or not you're a Dan fan, just go read it. It's a fantastic piece.
That sure is. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad, thanks as always. Hope the rest of your day is outstanding, and we'll talk with you again before too long.
All right, Rich. Always good talking to you.
Thanks, Chad. Chad Finn with us here on Dantown.